Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your vacuum sealed season 5 t-shirt sitting on my shelving unit, ascending up to the heavens of Mercedes-Benz Stadium of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. It has been an eventful couple of weeks in Kanye West. Most weeks with Kanye are eventful. These have been unusually publicly eventful. Kanye has been threatening to put out Donda for the last couple weeks. I should qualify this by saying we are recording in the second week of August. I'm going on vacation. By the time this comes out, maybe Donda will be out. TBD. Could happen. You never know. But enough has happened with Kanye that has been really front and center on my mind that I felt like I wanted to talk to people who had been there watching. Kanye has had two release events for Donda, both of them at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. The first one, he played a bunch of music and stomped around the center of the field for an hour and change. The second one was a much more curated affair. Demna from Balenciaga was the creative director. There was a live stream of Kanye and friends putting, I would say, finishing touches, but nothing is finished as of this moment. So putting touches onto the album and Kanye sleeping on live stream. Very The Artist Is Divorced. And then he gave another performance, a more ambitious one, a broader in scope one than the first event. There were still tens of thousands of fans in the stands, but on the stadium floor, Kanye was sitting in this kind of ascetic setup with a mattress and a few items of clothing and also kind of stomped around, but there were hundreds of extras creating much more of a visual spectacle. And then at the end of the show, he or someone like him ascended out of the stadium up through the beam of light into the sky or very, very high. They didn't technically leave the stadium. I was blessed to know many people who were there for night two. I was not able to go. Well, I was sick on the first one, and the second one I was on deadline, which is an unfortunate 1-2 punch. However, two of my buddies, Rachel Tashjian from GQ and Steph Yatka from Vogue, were there on the second one. And so I dropped them a text and I said, come on Popcast. And so here we are. What's up? I can't think of a more opulent thing than to be on Popcast. Hello.
We were on the private jet when we got the text.
Wait, was that the Puma jet? Was that the Puma
jet? Yes, it was. It was.
What? Can you explain, just for those who don't know, what is the logic of a Puma jet ferrying press to the Kanye event? What's the business abacus there? What's going on there?
We don't know.
Okay. I thought it was odd because Kanye has spoken ill of Puma, TBQH. So we were wondering, is that a Jay-Z Puma connected jet, perhaps?
Well, there was a, yes, I think it was a Jay-Z connected jet because someone on Twitter, you know, we were, of course, following what everyone was saying about the event very closely online in the sort of week leading up to things. And someone posted a picture of our plane and said, Jay-Z is here.
I saw that.
And we were like, surely he's not because he wasn't on that plane with us.
First of all, Jay-Z would not, I mean, as much as I like both of you, Jay-Z would not take the same plane as you guys. He would have another plane.
Right, because he and Steph Yatka have all that beef.
Jay-Z does not like Chapo Alavena. Like, he's just like, I just don't bang with it.
He doesn't understand the pleated skirts.
Yeah, he's just like, I just don't get it. He's like, I don't get it. It's like five different tartans? Like, what? What's the vibe? Like, I don't know. What's happening here? Okay, before we get into it, given who's here this week, we should do a little bit of a fit check with a nod to our friends at other fashion podcasts that do fit checks. Hello, Lawrence and James. And, you know, shout out to everybody in the fashion podcasting ecosystem. Shall we do it? I can't think of a podcast episode that would be more meaningful to do. So shall we?
I think we should.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Who's going to start?
John, why don't you start?
I would love to start. Oh,
okay.
I thought you'd never ask. Oh my gosh. Okay. So here's some crucial things. I'm going on vacation tomorrow. This is the last fit that I'm going to get off before vacation, which hopefully will come with some old other fits. So what I've been wearing all day is it's a bit, actually, to be honest, it's pretty chaotic. if I'm gonna be honest. I am wearing a mustard yellow Versace jeans couture button-up shirt with like the dangly buttons from, my guess is late 90s, maybe early 2000s, maybe more late 90s. It's a little bit on the small side, but the color is so tremendous that I had to cough it up and take it home. Underneath that, I am wearing an NBA Youngboy t-shirt purchased from the Spencer's Gifts website, I believe. I believe it is official NBA Youngboy product. And I am wearing Sherman Williams painter pants with actual paint on them, not by me, that I picked up at a thrift store that shall remain nameless. But, you know, real ones know. And then I am wearing LV trainers and tie-dye Nike Dry Fit by Liam Goslett.
Incredible.
Wow. This sounds like an enormous fit.
It's very chaotic. I was walking around Soho and I was like, I'm glad I'm feeling good today because this fit requires very, very intense physical energy to match it. So I was feeling it today.
Yeah, I mean, you can hear the Versace in your voice.
That is a true story. True story. Okay, Steph, talk us through. Where are you at?
Well, I was at the office today. So, and also I'm very brand loyal. So I'm, of course, wearing a Chipovalowena blouse. That is it's like a black flocked cotton with some red velvet flowers on it. And it's got a big poopy sleeve. And then underneath, I've got a floral print Marnie dress. And I was wearing some Prada Oxfords and black socks.
Nice. Nice. Your outfits have outfits. That's where you're at right now.
It's a lot. I got a couple of looks getting on the subway today.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Rachel, I know that you have just arrived at vacation.
I have.
You must be just in full bloom. Talk us through it.
I'm wearing tie-dye Ashley Williams sweatpants. Whew. That say, I am precious on them. And I'm actually wearing my Donda t-shirt.
Oh, with the Mercedes logo?
Exactly. Yeah. And then I'm wearing a pair of shoes that I got from The Row, which are like, I once described them as like being more of like the idea of a whisper of a shoe rather than an actual shoe.
Which style from The Row are we talking?
They're like a mesh loafer.
Nice. That sounds phenomenal. Very, very glad to be able to talk about these things with you. I think most podcast listeners, if you're still with us, we are going to talk about other stuff. So y'all were able to PJ it down to Atlanta on the Puma Jet for Donda to the live experience. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about Kanye and Demna's relationship. And I do think we should talk, you know, in the last couple of days, Frank Ocean has kind of reemerged from the ether with a new luxury or quasi-luxury, depending on the price point, jewelry line and a stall in a Chinatown adjacent jewelry mart. I think we should just talk about, why is music not enough? So let's talk first about Ye. The Demna-Ye relationship goes back a really long time. And I wonder if you could elaborate about what it is that you think makes these two figures simpatico. What do you think they talk about when they hang out?
What was funny, before we were, you know, on the private jet, I was rereading a lot of the pieces about, you know, Demna and Kanye's sort of early relationship. And I was rereading one of Dirk Standen's handful of interviews with Kanye. And the way that he talks about Demna is almost, it's almost like he's describing a significant other. He says, I believe he even says he's the one, as like the next, but, and this would have been in 2015, you know, as like, he's the next, like, most important designer in fashion. And at this point, like, we were still, you know, thought of Kanye as having this super close relationship with Riccardo Tisci, which is not to say that he, like, you know, abandoned his relationship with Riccardo for Demna, but he did really zero in on Demna from, I believe, and Steph, you may know or remember even more closely than I do, because you were at style.com at that point. He was in Demna's, the Ventmoss studio, you know, which was the brand at which Demna started, I think in the first season, looking at those clothes.
I mean, Kanye was the first famous person I saw wearing any Vetements. Like, there's that famous photo, I think, of Kanye. Is it Kanye and Lord?
The and
famous
Lord.
Yeah. And Kanye's wearing, I think, a hoodie from that first Vetements season. And that's the kind of, like, you know, mass consciousness breakthrough moment for the brand.
Mm-hmm. And Demna is an alumni of Martin Margiela. And I think Kanye was like a very, one of the celebrities who was hip to what was going on at Margiela, like one of the first celebrities to really wear Margiela. You know, he wore the crystal face mask for a number of shows. And so I think perhaps Kanye caught wind of Demna's existence from a Margiela meeting, or, you know, Kanye also tends to know where cool people are and what they're doing. So there's potential that they just sort of linked up. But everyone was whispering that, you know, maybe Demna had worked on Yeezy season one, maybe he had worked on season three. They did a project earlier this year, some commemorative t-shirts after DMX died. And so I think there've always been like two planets orbiting each other, but finally they collided.
Rachel, you brought this up a little bit in your piece about the Donda event. They both have a relationship in terms of kind of like the haute and the mass and bringing some, you know, refined, potentially veering towards avant ideas into mass spaces. At least that's Kanye's thing. And then it's from Demna. Often it's the reverse, kind of like upstreaming things that are considered, you know, quite quotidian and reimagining them through like a much more highfalutin lens. Do you think the fact that they're both so willing to kind of tug in those directions, is that what makes them on the same page? That's why they work well together, if indeed you think they work well together.
I do think that there is something really interesting about the fact that this summer, Demna, who of course is now the creative director of Balenciaga, has been there since 2015, debuted a couture collection. In the same time frame, Kanye is beginning to roll out some of his pieces for The Gap. So these are two fashion concepts that exist on completely opposite ends of the spectrum. And I think that that sort of, one, that chemistry is quite, you know, obviously really intriguing to both of these figures. But I think, you know, they also are very interested in sort of peeking into or inhabiting places where you wouldn't quite expect to see them. And I think that in a certain way is the appeal of that live stream that happened in the 24 hours leading up to the event, where it was like, and in part, I think it was that we haven't seen so many celebrities just sort of like living a normal life over the past year and a half. So that added an added element of, you know, the uncanny perhaps, but seeing this kind of grainy live stream of Kanye, you know, lifting weights, of sort of dancing with these Balenciaga models, just sort of like taking a nap at one point. I think that sort of finding these two people in unexpected places seems to drive a lot of their most creative work.
Before we go any further, did either of you buy the Gap puffer?
I did, yes.
Steph?
I didn't.
Okay, I did. In black, not red. The red, I thought, this is overkill. There was another piece that they had dropped that might have been inclined, but I'm curious. I don't know if I'll be able to wear it, but I'm curious to be in possession of it, is I guess how I feel. I thought like Lil Yachty looked very good in it on the live stream. I feel better about that.
Right.
Can you talk? So when you guys got to Atlanta, did you go straight into the stadium? Did you see the room at all? Like, did you guys go into the tunnels, into the catacombs at all? Or did you just go straight to VIP and just, you know, have people serve champagne and whatnot? Like, how'd that go?
We had a little bit of downtime between our private jet arrival and our party bus chauffeur to the stadium. But I mean, we were walking through the corridor level, the tunnel level of the stadium, but we did not see the room that Kanye was in. Although I did anxiously look into any open door.
Of course.
To see, could that be it? And honestly, in a stadium, every room looks like that.
Fair. Yes, that's true. In the tombs of a stadium, they all do, in fact, look like that.
Yes. We did get a great sort of walking by view of all of the performers, the dancers, I guess you could call them, that were wearing all black and circling the stage for much of the performance. We watched them sort of like corral themselves in the parking lot and then encounter them again in a tunnel leading out. And they seemed really hyped to be there.
And they were, from what I can gather, part of a casting call that went out the day before. So basically, you know, there's like a couple of like weird Atlanta fashion kids who I follow on TikTok and like kind of never, you know, just kind of followed arbitrarily like 3 months ago. And then all of a sudden there they were at the stadium. You know, it just seemed like anybody who was even remotely curious about fashion down in Atlanta was able to be part of that. What did y'all make of the aesthetic, the kind of the all black aesthetic, the militaria, the you know, the flak jackets, bulletproof vests or bulletproof vests adjacent in clothing? It reminded me, from a Kanye perspective, when Kanye did the Brit Awards in 2015 with all the grime stars and had like 7,500 guys on stage, all in all black. That's the last time I could think of that. Obviously, then the Jay-Z and kind of the all black everything moment from 10 or 12 years ago. What do you see as the kind of meaning of the return of that idea? To me, it felt a little bit monastic, a little bit, you know, I can't see Kanye wearing all white as a sign of purification, but I can see him wearing all black as a sign of purification or rebirth. That's kind of how it struck me, but I was wondering how it felt to y'all and also seeing it up close. Steph, what do you think?
Well, seeing all of this street cast fans in their own black clothes reminded me a lot of the Madison Square Garden fashion show / The Life of Pablo listening event, I guess what we're calling it, where there were a bunch of street cast people on the floor of MSG wearing their own clothes, but they had been given a different color palette of like muddy brown, mustard yellow, army green, and maybe a little bit of burnt orange or purple. And in many ways, this felt like, to me at least, like a natural successor to that, in that the quote unquote real people were bringing this like unsupervised energy. You know, you can go to some Kanye things that are seamless. They're perfect. You can't find a crack in the armor of the production value and the lights and the music. And yes, there wasn't a 40,000 person stadium, but it did feel somehow more human or more intimate than what you expect from a major celebrity and recording artist.
The intimacy, and obviously you take that back a step to the live stream of him in this room. Rachel, you described this really well in your piece. I'm going to read a little bit. The full possibilities of his makeshift space were on display, and it was frankly electrifying. He was the monk reducing his belongings to necessities in pursuit of a higher power, asceticism on fleek. He was the divorced dad who hasn't gotten around to buying furniture or even a bed frame. Too real. He was the prisoner serving time for his indeterminate crimes. He was the artist whose tiny studio sparks collaboration and 11th hour genius. I read this and it felt very real. Kanye is, on some level, especially in the wake of the complicated 2019 and 2020 that he had, his outspoken support of Trump, his aborted run for president, Kanye is a man without an island in a lot of ways. And then add to that the divorce, the in-process divorce from Kim, and a lot of the odds are stacked against him. And I think making this choice to distill down the aesthetic presentation of first the live stream by basically being like, the artist is divorced, the artist is stuck in this room, and then the actual layout of the stage setup at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, where it's just him, a mattress, and maybe five or six items of clothing and some push-up, what do you even call those things? Handles? Push-up handles? Here's a man reduced to the kind of barest version of himself. I know how that looked on screens, but how did it look in real life, surrounded by, you know, tens of thousands of people in the crowd? How did it read in person?
Well, it's funny, actually. He was quite low to the ground. He was on a bit of a platform, but it wasn't a super tall platform. And so it was easier for us to see the people moving around him than it was for us to see him, which I thought was quite interesting, because usually you would expect we're playing to the VIP crowd here, you know, but, but I kept thinking, wow, this must look even better if you're in the sort of, you know, the nosebleed section. You can really see this movement of people in this really beautiful way that we couldn't, I mean, we could appreciate it in some way, but I would imagine it was even more incredible if you were up higher. So we actually, Steph and I pulled up the live stream and were watching that while we were also watching the performance. But it was interesting, you know, when you talk about the necessities, it was like these pieces that were these incredible. I mean, there's this puffer that at first I had thought was a down comforter sort of strewn across the bed, but actually turned out to be a puffer from the couture show that happened, the Balenciaga couture show that happened in early July. And then of course, this incredible jacket covered with these huge spikes, which was from the fall 2020 collection, which I thought was interesting that he sort of dipped, you know, typically in these types of projects or collaborations, the musician or visual artist would want the newest and most recent thing. But clearly there's a specific fashion vision that he had for this, that those pieces sort of spoke to. One is incredibly aggressive and hard. You know, it's spikes that are made of rubber and the jacket's base is leather. And then of course you have this other piece, which is looks like almost like a comforter. So is incredibly soft. And I thought that, you know, he kept putting on these two jackets, which I thought was a really such an interesting way of using fashion to sort of communicate what he was feeling at any time. And I don't know how choreographed the taking off and putting on was, but I thought it was pretty awesome.
Let's all take a few seconds to reflect upon our rare Yeezy Season 3 zines. We will be right back.
See, I invented Kanye. It wasn't any Kanyes. And now I look around and there's so many Kanyes. I used to love Kanye. I used to love Kanye. I even had the pink polo. I thought I was Kanye. What if Kanye made a song about Kanye? Call him Mr. Old Kanye. Man, that'd be so Kanye. That's all it was, Kanye. We still love.
Hi, this is Kara Swisher, and I want to talk to you about my new podcast for the New York Times called Sway. When you hear someone influential, a business leader or a culture icon, or God forbid, a politician, telling us about themselves, and they're like, we're going to end world hunger or cure cancer, or we're going to revolutionize the tech industry if only you'll buy our product. And it just sounds like they're reading from a press release. Yeah, we don't learn much from talking points. If you want to know what people who hold power in our world are really all about, you need to hear how they answer the tough questions. And that is my specialty. That's why I'm teaming up with the New York Times for a new podcast called Sway. I'm going to talk to some big names, but also some names you may not recognize, but need to know. And although it might get messy, in fact, it's guaranteed to be messy, it's going to be really fun too. You can get Sway wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes are available Mondays and Thursdays.
There were so many like small gestures during the event, like even the phone to the ear. And I'm like, is this a performance? Is he actually calling someone? If he is actually calling someone, isn't that pretty loud? Isn't it hard to hear? You know, like I kind of couldn't piece together which part of it was performance and which part of it was actual. But Ye does like to deify himself. We've seen that years and years and years. There's always been different versions of his self-deification. And when I saw that Balenciaga jacket with spikes, and I think I first saw it maybe in like a still image from the day before or 2 days before when he was in the room, it's almost as if he was deifying himself, but in reverse, as a demon, as, you know, as a warrior, as someone not to be approached. Kanye is an expansive person. He can be loose and loopy. There's like generally an openness to him. So to see him, at least in that setup, just present himself as so walled off and quite literally untouchable, like touch me and you'll bleed. That was very, very striking and really, really felt like a man who chose to put on a hard, challenging shell so that nobody could get to him. It's how it read. But then I agree, the puffer stuff kind of undermined that. Here we are doing deep reads and, you know, maybe we're the only ones doing them.
But I think that's the whole point, is that he didn't speak. A lot of people were wondering, is he going to say something before or after? And so you really start to read into the symbolism of every detail, trying to put together this puzzle of like, what is Kanye thinking? And one of the things that struck me after the fact, not to be too emo, but that's my brand.
That's okay. And this is a safe space for emo, for sure.
Like Rachel was saying, the performance was really best viewed from above, and how symbolic and serendipitous that the Mercedes-Benz Stadium has this cupola at the top that you can open to heaven and project this beam of light up. It's like the whole thing was choreographed to be seen from the sky.
It was for God.
Yes. Yes. And then at the end, and at the very end, you know, Kanye or a Kanye-like figure ascends up into that light, like quite literally is delivered up onto the heaven. A note of kind of like ecstatic optimism to close out that event. Did it read that way in the room or in the space?
Yes, it did. People were, first of all, quite shocked to see this, especially because the stage, you know, had so much space around it between the sort of functioning stage and where the audience was seated, that you were at quite a remove from this kind of like center of action. Seeing him sort of ascend into this light was really quite shocking. I mean, also because it was so literal, you know, it was such an, in a certain way, like it's almost a dumb idea, which is what makes it so genius, I think.
Well, that is, I mean, look, I you know, I love Ye and I've spent a lot of time thinking about Ye and perhaps even have a penchant for overanalyzing his choices. But one of the things I think Ye does well, and I think this is why the gap thing makes a lot of sense, is these distillations, right? He can make the simplest, verging on generic idea, somehow feel invested with some kind of like aesthetic authority. And that's not something that a lot of artists can do. There are plenty of artists who navigate pop aesthetics and make it feel dumb and kind of like, meh, uninteresting, uninspired. But Kanye, often when he's at his most direct, can feel incredibly powerful. Maybe that's why that gesture at the end, as kind of like, you know, low-key goofy as it was, still was like, still had that energy to it.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that the fashion community has always really engaged with Kanye is because he is very considered as an artist. Everything is an aesthetic choice, and it gives you a huge vocabulary to analyze and think about, whether it's the more obscure choice, like the Balenciaga rubber spike jacket, or something that's super obvious. He could wear the most basic article of clothing. I mean, he wore Dickies to the Met Gala, and I think about that often.
Does Anna think about it often? Just, you know, just out of curiosity. Just, you know, anyway. Speaking of the Met Gala, we should talk a little bit about Frank, because I am curious, but, you know, Frank wore a Prada anorak. That's Prada, but it's an anorak to the Met Gala. You know, that's a person who certainly has toyed with disrupting these kinds of high-low things. A few days ago, he released the catalog for Homer, which is a luxury jewelry, etc. brand. It is not an album. Maybe there'll be an album at some point, but it is not an album. There is a stall in a jewelry mart down right on the east side of Chinatown, and you can make an appointment and go buy Frank Ocean design jewelry. How did this move strike you guys as far as the next pivot in the Frank Ocean as craftsman narrative? You know, he's still building the staircase. It's just made out of 24 karat gold now, I guess.
Well, I think it seemed quite inevitable that he would do something like this. I mean, there have been a lot of, you know, rumors over the past couple of years that he would do some kind of project, whether it be, you know, a fashion brand or like a home goods brand or something sort of like that, that, you know, was a commercial project beyond making music. And also, I mean, he's really one of the most fashion fluid and curious wearers of clothing in the world. So it also seems like something that there's a huge audience for.
And within the catalog, it was announced that he is collaborating with Prada on another Prada nylon anorak. So I think the hope is that whether it's at the Met Gala this September or in May, maybe we see Frank Ocean in another Prada anorak. I don't know.
To sort of hark back to something I said right at the top, if you think about the ways over the years that musicians have tried to impose themselves into style and the fashion business, often initially through merchandise and then maybe through licensing names for lines. And certainly in hip hop, this happened a lot in the 90s and the 2000s, your Rockawares, your Sean Johns, and so on and so forth. Those incursions always felt like intrusions. They did not feel welcomed. They did not feel embraced. Kanye and Frank are different. I think they're taken relatively seriously. And I wonder if you think that that is a testament to the individual kind of visions of these two people or of an overall softening of the fashion industry in terms of whose perspectives are welcome. Is it something that it feels like there's going to be 10 more people behind Kanye and Frank potentially making moves of this nature? Or is it just that these two guys are kind of just that interesting and that good?
Well, I think it's cyclical. You know, there were 100 guys before Kanye and Frank, like Sean John. I mean, Justin Timberlake had a denim collection. Let's never forget. Gwen Stefani had Lamb.
Are you speaking? Just say the name. Say the name. William Rast. William Rast. Billy Rapp to his friends. Like, that's all. Just say it. Just speak it. It's okay.
But I think, like, for as long as there has been photography, musicians have been, crafting their image and trying to get other people to buy into it, whether it's merch or it's a fashion collection. I think right now is sort of a golden era of the musician fashion link up, because you have Rihanna and you have Kanye and you have Frank. And it's just like a trifecta of people with great taste. I mean, Tyler, the Creator, has a brand. There's just so much to get excited about. And, you know, within the fashion industry, it's really easy to obsess over a brand with a iconic creative director. You know, that's how we feel about Demna. Yes, fashion is sort of softening the rules, but also if you see someone with great taste, you want to emulate it. It doesn't matter if it's an influencer or a musician or an actor or Gwyneth Paltrow.
Never heard of her. Who's that? Rachel, where was Golf LaFleur on the 10 essential American, new American brands? Where was Golf LaFleur? Let's talk about it.
I love Golf LaFleur. I mean,
so good.
Tyler, the Creator, is like another great example of someone. Like, he and Frank and Kanye and, you know, ASAP Rocky, there's like a Young Thug is another, you know, major sort of fashion figure. Like, I think there's this really significant generation of musicians right now who just have a very obsessive understanding of or curiosity about fashion. And at the same time that was happening, you know, and also like an interest in wearing the weird stuff, you know, Gunna is wearing the crazy stuff. I mean, he shops like a real housewife. He's incredible.
Gunna, first of all, I'm really starting to lean into wearing things that are cropped. Not in like a full crop way, but like for my body type, I'm trying to like lean in that direction a little bit. Gunna loves a short crop shirt, not like a baby shirt, but just a shirt that lands maybe 2 inches higher than you would think it would land on him. Gunna really embraces that. So shout out to Gunna for being unafraid of the midsection. Really, really respect it.
It's not just the summer of crop tops for him.
No.
It's been that way for a long time.
No, it's four seasons. It's all weather. And obviously, like, well-off musicians have always been proximate to high fashion. Certainly, it's not that the notion that musicians are taking style risks is novel or new, but there is something particular about the last few years where, you know, you mentioned Thug, we're talking about Gunna, like, we're seeing people embrace luxury, which is fine, not necessarily inherently interesting, but doing unusual things with it, taking it into unexpected directions. And it's so refreshing, certainly after what could feel like the rigid stylistic limitations in the 90s and the 2000s, it's nice to see all this freedom. It feels really unburdening to see all this freedom.
That's absolutely true. I mean, if you look at, you know, Lil Nas X's arc over the past, I guess, 2 years, fashion has played such an important role in that trajectory. You know, I think what he wears and the way that he expresses himself visually is such an important part of his entire project.
Absolutely. you know, you mentioned Rihanna a minute ago. You know, the main Fenty high fashion line seems to have gone away. Am I correct in thinking that?
It's on hiatus.
Yeah, it's on pause.
It's on pause. Yes, it's on pause. But there are other Fenty entities that are up and running, and she's a billionaire now. And I think Rihanna, Kanye, great examples of musicians who understand that music is, to some degree, a means to an end now. You know what I mean? Like, on some level, music is the occasion to create something vaster for yourself and potentially much more financially lucrative. That didn't feel like it was really an option 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Now, you know, Kanye, I've been thinking a lot about the last 2 weeks in Kanye West. Donda's going to come out. It'll be interesting. Maybe it'll be good. Might be great. Might be amazing. It's tough to say. But I think what we're going to be talking about 5 years from now or 10 years from now are the spike jacket, is him ascending up in the stadium. It's going to be the boots and the mattress. I think Kanye's sense of kind of theater and presentation, that's really where his art is now. The music is merely an occasion to get there.
Well, and I think to that end, like, you know, if you look at sort of the flip side of that, and you were talking a few minutes ago about, you know, there was maybe an aversion to working with musicians within the fashion world. And I think now that's like, one, you have a new generation, I think, of designers who don't have those sorts of biases. But also, you, if you're someone like Demna, my brand has 6 million Instagram followers, which is quite a lot, but it's just a totally different level of audience to work on this live stream with Kanye.
Oh, that's interesting. So you think in a weird way, it's putting Demna under a spotlight that he may not normally have. I mean, he's not the most public facing of designers, generally speaking, but you're saying just like the sheer level of exposure is actually quite high compared to his ordinary, his simple life running Balenciaga.
Well, I think you can measure it by what happened with Riccardo Tisci, who we mentioned earlier at Givenchy. Before Kanye and Riccardo really got together, he was already famous in fashion and everyone in fashion knew who he was. And he had been running Givenchy for almost a decade. And then suddenly he was designing Kim Kardashian's wedding dress. And that is a level of exposure. And like, I hate to use this term, but brand awareness.
Oh, I thought you were going to say clout.
That is a level of clout that is hard to get within the, you know, hardcore insular fashion community. And now I think everyone knows Riccardo Tisci. I mean, everyone who's obsessed with music and fashion knows who he is. And funnily enough, mere hours before we started recording this, he posted the Watch the Throne graphics on his Instagram. I think to remind everyone,
I did that.
We love Demna, but I did it first.
He Ray J'd him. He Ray J'd Demna. Unreal. Unreal flex. He Ray J'd Demna. Also, I thought you were going to say just hours before we started recording, you went and got your barking dog t-shirt out of storage just to talk about it. I thought that's what you were going to say.
Not yet.
That's going to be deep vintage. I hope to see that on the real, you know, 20 years from now at 20% off.
After this episode, prices are going to skyrocket.
As Fat Joe said, price went up. Thank you, Fat Joe. I appreciate that. Quick sidebar. It is not always a given. It was not always a given that Kanye was going to be taken seriously by people who take fashion seriously. That was not always a given. And I think there were even moments in the early Yeezy seasons where people were kind of like, why is dude making Mossy Oak sweatshirts? Like, what's really going on here? Like, what's this about? Did something change to make him a better match in sort of like high fashion? Did something evolve? Did fashion change? Did Kanye change? Was there some kind of twist that made that happen?
I think the pandemic had a lot to do with it, actually, because one of the last fashion events was Paris Fashion Week in February and early March of 2020. And it was there that Kanye held both a Sunday service and a Yeezy show. And I remember at that time, people were feeling sort of exasperated that amidst a growing concern about the virus and the stress of Fashion Week. You know, everyone loves to complain about Fashion Week. This celebrity was coming in and demanding, you know, the Sunday service was at 8 a.m. on a Sunday and the Yeezy show was at 9 p.m., I think, the next day, which ultimately became 10 p.m. And so everyone was feeling a little bit like not so pleased. But after a year and more of doing things virtually, and maybe this is just my opinion here, it felt invigorating to be in the room where it was happening. And I think there haven't been a lot of in-person fashion shows. And this really felt, you know, with Demna creative directing it, it felt one super put together in a way that when you're putting on a performance at Fashion Week, you have, you know, only so much time and everyone's already a bit harried. But it felt like we were all looking for something exciting to talk about. And this was like, to extend the metaphor I used before, like two planets colliding. Like what we got Mucha and Raph, the debut. We got Gucci, Balenciaga, the hacking. And now we have Kanye and Demna. It feels like these are the real seismic moments that have happened in fashion this year. So in a weird way, I think the whole industry taking a pause from being so overloaded with visuals and with items and with graphics and with events made this feel even more special.
I also think that, you know, pre-pandemic, the success of the sneakers was just undeniable. The success of the, you know, the shoes that he was doing under Yeezy at Adidas was just like such a monster success. They sort of took off at a moment where high fashion sneakers, like, you know, Balenciaga, for example, you know, and Gucci, like they were really starting to like, okay, we have to make a hit sneaker. It's not just like, oh, it would be nice if we had a sneaker. It's like, this is a major investment for us to make sneakers.
The Triple S was the Jesus walks of high fashion sneakers. Yes.
And I think so many other elements of the fashion world sort of caught up, in a certain way, like caught up to Kanye's taste. I mean, if you think about when he was really championing Phoebe Philo, who was the longtime designer at Celine, she was she was well known to people in the fashion world, of course, but a real cult figure. And, you know, by putting his then wife, or I would say, I guess, estranged wife in Celine, which he did when he kind of did that infamous makeover that was documented on Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Iconic moment.
Exactly. I mean, that catapulted that brand and that style of clothing to, again, as we were saying, to this huge audience of people. And again, you know, if you look at the designers who he's really paid attention to and has really championed over the past 5 or 6 years, like Jerry Lorenzo and Demna, those are people who are now like at the bleeding edge of fashion. So I think there's also the fashion world in a certain way, the taste of the fashion world, I should say, is caught up to Kanye. I mean, the other thing too, is that like he, for all intents and purposes, seems to have like reinvented t-shirts with the Life of Pablo, Callie Thornhill DeWitt t-shirts like that. But again, like fashion brands were like, we really need to make a $600 t-shirt. So I do think it's a number of things that have sort of caught up.
And I have a theory about Kanye Yeezy about sneakers that I haven't had a chance to like really write about anywhere. But it's interesting because I think with each style iteration, I do think that there are legitimate kind of like silhouette innovations that feel fresh. But because they are kind of derided as essentially hypebeast assets, in a weird way, they don't ever make it into the actual fashion conversation, and they become this kind of little salt and pepper of avant-gardism in the mainstream. There are shoes that he makes that I see extremely regular people wearing, like even the slides. You see like very regular people wearing the slides. I would not pay $300 on the resale market for those slides, but I look at them and I'm like, that's an odd shaped shoe for 500,000 people to be wearing. That's unusual. That's strange. And I felt that way about almost each of the sneaker silhouettes. And it's interesting how they have been slightly removed from the fashion sneaker discourse, because the fashion sneaker discourse really revolves around, you know, $500, $600, $700 or more, $700 and up sneakers, which are not really treated as an asset class because there's not any upside to reselling. What are you going to, you know, you buy it for seven, sell it for eight or nine. It's no real upside. But Yeezys are still available at a relatively affordable price point, and therefore they become, you know, a stadium goods item, a flight club item, and they're, and by extension are kept out of what I think of the fashion sneaker conversation, at least by real fashion people. That's how it seems to me. And because of that, he's been able to sneak some of that stuff into a much more mainstream space, much more so than, you know, obviously the idea of the Triple S has been really important. It had a long arc that was really influential, but it's in a very small, select community of people who can afford it or aspire to affording it. Whereas Yeezys are just, you go to like any Walmart in America and there's people wearing Yeezys. And that's kind of what Ye has always said. Like when I talked to him in 2013, he was basically just like, I want to make the most affordable, which that hasn't worked out, but like clothes for everybody. And that's his way of doing it. And they happen to be a higher design value than you'd expect. And I hope we'll see more of that with Gap.
But I do feel like in the same way that the runway fashion conversation has sort of, it caught up to where Kanye was with t-shirts, and then it dumped that idea and moved on to something else. It caught up to where Kanye was with sneakers and has since moved on to this blobular shoe silhouette. Like Givenchy makes these like plasticky sandals, and Bottega Veneta has like some real clunky, it looks like gum stuck to the bottom of your shoe, but that's the whole shoe. And so I think in some way fashion is paying attention, obviously paying attention to what Kanye is doing. The new Yeezys that we were gifted look like a sea caterpillar. And that aesthetic of shoe is very popular in fashion. It's just not a sneaker.
I'm into it. So you guys, have you worn that new silhouette, the Yeezys, the caterpillar ones? Have you worn them out?
I'm keeping mine on ice.
Don't take them to flight club yet. Don't do that. Don't do that.
No, I'm going to save them for like 20 years. And then they'll be like grandmas in the Yeezys.
Yo, first of all, 20 years from now, like you, I need you to bust those out. And then we're going to go to IF in Soho, to IF in Soho. And whatever they're selling there, like that's going to match perfectly with this silhouette, this Kanye silhouette, I bet.
Exactly.
Whew. Wow. What a chat. Big energy. So happy that you guys came through.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Truly the joy and privilege is mine. Rachel and Steph, I appreciate you. That is our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Facebook group. Give me some Yeezy fit picks in the Facebook group. Get on the Discord. Email those to me. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. Spotify, Google, Apple, yada, 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 etc. Our producer for Podcast After Dark, as always, Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. We made it in America, sweet baby Jesus. Ooh. Oh, sweet baby.